small firm entrepreneur architects. Get ready to build a better business with the Entree Architect podcast, where business meets architecture. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, the host of Entree Architect podcast. Join me every week for inspiring interviews with passionate people that share proven strategies to help you build a better business.
If you think there is a problem, one, you can't make a move until you have a plan in place. The accountability chart really helps plan, okay, for the business 6 to 12 months out, this is what we need.
We cover it all, from financial management to marketing, sales, productivity, and beyond.
There's two sides of it, right? So there's the one when you don't have any work. So you're like, well, I'm either going to charge enough to be profitable or I'm going to go out of business. Or you have so much work and you have backlog and you don't need any more work. So you charge way more.
I'd also say lagging measures, one of the best, like the best. So for any client, for any professional service company, if you're going to take one thing away from what we're talking about today, is to look at a number called the labor efficiency ratio.
Entree Architect is not just a podcast. It's your secret weapon for success. With over 500 episodes, it's one of the longest running architecture podcasts in the world. You're sure to find the information you need to elevate your business. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now and join the community of small firm entrepreneur architects building better businesses.
Dr. Sutton in the house.
I'm not there yet.
Oh, am I? Sorry.
Jumping the gun there.
Too soon. Too soon. Cold open.
Yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. This season's theme is Living Legends. We will be talking about ladies who are alive and over 80 years of age who have contributed to their professions and continue to inspire us to this day. Literal living legends, y'all. This week, we are talking about the iconic Dr. Sharon Sutton. She is a musician, an architect, an activist, author, educator, and all-around living legend, the boss. I'm Jessica Rogers, missing some manicotti, based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, missing out on some quilting time from San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjiri Rivas, missing a pickleball game in Houston, Texas. Time for a disclaimer. Remember, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find. As friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. Let's jump in. So, our story begins in the year 1941. Sharon Agretta Sutton was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. At the age of 5, Sharon began taking piano lessons from a piano player, specifically the organist from her mother's church.
I love a musical lady.
Me too.
This is giving me Ruth Gordon Schnapp episode 89 vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So one of my resources is actually an interview by Julia Gamolina at Madame Architect. And in the interview, Sharon talks about her childhood and the role of Ohio during the time that Jim Crow laws were in effect. So, for example, Sharon couldn't go to, say, the local skating rink or swimming pool because colored people weren't allowed in.
That must have been so hard for her growing up and for all of those kids.
Yeah, awful.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that people that experienced that are still alive today and can recall.
Right. It's recent history.
Right. Exactly. So for Sharon, her music was something that she could do.
Mm.
I guess it also reminds me of like how it was for me. Like it was something to take up time while my parents worked. So they just put me in those after school classes, you know? For Sharon, in college prep high school that she went to, Sharon would be introduced to the French horn, which, fun fact, I also played.
What?
Not in high school, though, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea you played an instrument, much less the French horn.
You didn't?
No. That's so cool. I had no idea.
Yeah, I did. Okay, so yes, I played the French horn, but not in high school, though. I think I did like 2 years of French horn lessons when I was in middle school, so 6th and 7th grade, before going fully into art. And Najee, I think all of us played some sort of instrument at some point between the three of us, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so I played the cello in middle school and high school. I wanted to keep playing in an orchestra in college, but studio schedules did not allow. So now my cello is gathering dust in my closet. Whoops.
Oh, how sad.
I know.
I played the piano for a hot second when I was a little girl, but my true love is the bass. I played that for an even hotter second as a teenager, but not in school.
Electric or standing?
I really would like to play standing, but I only played the electric bass. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And also not in school or anything. I was just learning by myself with the internet, you know.
Which is impressive.
Yeah.
By the way. Yeah. Anyway, so for me, my high school didn't offer music. It was all based on design, right? Like I went to art school. But actually, when I was applying to high schools, like I wanted to go to a special magnet school, I had the option to go down the music route, but I hated practicing and I hated carrying the French horn. I thank my parents that they had the sense to rent my instrument instead of buying it, because I obviously did not want to like hold on to it, because it was such a drag to like carry. And I also did music and art, so like don't even get me started like having the days that I had to carry my French horn and like a portfolio or like an art piece or a mock, like ugh it's too much.
I mean, I feel you on the big instruments. Anytime I had to bring my cello places, it was always like a game of Tetris to be able to fit it in the backseat of the car. Like, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honey, try carrying that stuff on my bus. Oh, okay. Anyway, back to Sharon and things that I have in common with her. So this college prep high school that Sharon attended, it was similar to my high school in the sense that students had to study an art-related course along with her academic courses. So in the case of Sharon, she actually, that was part of her curriculum. She took music and her academic classes.
I love all these connections between you and Sharon.
Yeah, it's special when you connect on a personal level with a lady that you're learning about.
Yes, it was mind-boggling to me, like, as I was reading it. I've always been a fan of Sharon, but to know her personal story was like, oh my God, it's crazy. Okay, so Sharon would get a full-ride scholarship to the Manhattan School of Music for the French horn.
Woo! Go Sharon! So Manhattan, as in she moved to New York City from Ohio, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. So after high school...
Not Manhattan, Kansas?
No.
Just check it.
After she graduated high school, she went to Manhattan for college. So yeah, she went to school in New York to further her knowledge of the French horn. Sharon would graduate from college and tour with the Soul Horic Attractions. She performed on Broadway and Radio City Music Hall. Plus, she was on the original cast album of the recording of Man of La Mancha.
What? She really went for it and had like a whole music career. This is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's really awesome that she's on an original cast album too. I was in pit orchestra for the musicals in high school and I loved it. It was so fun to like play along with the shows, and I bet Sharon had a great time too.
Oh yeah. It's so interesting because Sharon will recall that in the 1960s, she believes that she might have been one of or the first Black female French horn player in a union. Professional musicians are unionized, which is also interesting because in the musicians' union, she didn't feel any like pay inequity. In fact, since she was a French horn player, you know, I guess the French horn is somewhat of a rare or unpopular instrument. They played French horn players a little bit more, which now is making me really think my life choices. Like, I went down the wrong road. I could have been making bank. Okay, I was, like, second chair, okay?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it's probably still competitive, but I get what you're saying. That's so interesting, though, and I love that she was able to not feel those inequities in her chosen profession.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. I'm glad that she was paid her worth.
Yes.
I'm also curious about this musicians union. I've never heard of musicians being in a union. I wonder if my family's in a union. This sounds like something, maybe it varies state by state. I don't know. I'm actually texting my brother right now, asking him, are you in a union?
I mean, I think when you're in like a professional orchestra setting, that, you know what I mean?
My brother is the first chair of the Puerto Rican Symphony. So
there you go.
So if there's a union, he'd be in it.
I don't know.
Okay.
Does he play the French horn? Is he going to get paid a lot more than the rest?
He plays the trombone. The first
trombone. Trombone.
So we'll tell you in the wrap up. Maybe you can find out if my brother's in a union or not.
Union.
In a union. You know what, though? I was going to ask. I should have texted you earlier to see. But anyway, it's fascinating. So eventually Sharon goes into architecture, right? Like, this is why we're here. Like, I mean, the episode is on architecture, not on French horn players.
Yeah. I'm curious about how the switch happens, you know?
Super curious.
Yeah. Like, I know I tend to drift a little, but this would have been a little too far. Okay, so it's also an interesting story. So, you know, Sharon is living in New York, playing the French horn, blah, 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 but Sharon is struggling to find an apartment. So, similar to today, she is dealing with a housing shortage and that ever-added obstacle, race. In an interview with Sharon from 2011, she says that New York City is the third most segregated city in the nation, which I found that to be very fascinating because I hadn't heard that, but I can see it. Anyway, just a little food for thought. So to solve this problem, Sharon bought a vacant former rooming house and she renovated it into a rent-controlled Class A multifamily home.
Okay, real estate mogul.
Love hearing how people get into development.
Yes. So this was her main thing. I forgot to mention, like, she's a musician, right? And with musicians, they always pay attention to the acoustics. So she was always very cognizant of the spaces that she practiced and the spaces that she played in. So that's like a little side anecdote because that's how she said that she was always aware of architecture.
Sure.
But buying that property
was her first kind of foray into design.
Exactly. So
yeah.
In 1967, Sharon would enroll at Parsons School of Design and then later on continue to study architecture at Columbia University, where she would be mentored by the iconic J. Max Bond Jr. and Romualdo Giorgola.
Oh, Romualdo Giorgola was an Italian architect who came to the States and taught at Penn and Columbia. He also had a firm in Philadelphia called Mitchell Giorgola Architects and worked on the Wright Brothers National Memorial Visitor Center. He was colleagues with Louis Kahn and others at Penn and was part of a group dubbed the Philadelphia School by a critic in 1961. Their designs were breaking with traditional modern tenets of the previous decades.
And J. Max Bond Jr. was a prominent Black American architect at a time when that was unheard of. He was a pioneer in his profession and broke many glass ceilings. He had a career that I actually aspired to have. Government buildings, libraries, cultural centers, international projects, head of committees, academic. The list goes on and on and on.
Iconic.
Yeah, what an honor for her to study under these two men.
Yeah, right. All right, so Sharon would earn her M.Arch. degree in 1973 and open up her own practice in 1976. Now, I didn't quite see when exactly she got her license, like what was the year, but Sharon did get her architecture license. And from the looks of it, in an interview, she mentions that she would be the 12th Black woman to receive her license.
This lady is such a boss. She had a successful career as a musician, which is not an easy feat.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lived a problem and was like, I'm going to change careers and be a part of the solution and dove right in. Like, who does that? Now she owns her own architecture firm and she's a Black woman. Imagine the unending hoops she had to jump through.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, each of these career accomplishments are impressive on their own, right? But to pivot and do both of them, like music and design. Amazing.
Amazing. All right. Okay, there's more amazingness that happens. So later in 1982, Sharon would earn a master's in philosophy and a PhD in psychology from the City University of New York.
Dr. Sutton in the house.
Woo! Okay, but she's going for a third career? Like, what?
Keep it coming.
I mean, I think this is like a first for our ladies, right? To have three separate careers.
Okay.
This is wild.
Cogelo con tequerisi. I don't, well, maybe it is a third
career. Different fields. Different fields is more what I mean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, different fields. Because I don't know if she necessarily applies. Well, she applies what she learns in psychology and philosophy, I think, later in her career.
To architecture.
To architecture. So.
Sure.
But she a doctor. So, also, I should clarify, though, that while she's earning her PhDs, Sharon was teaching architecture at Pratt Institute and Columbia University.
Ekumi?
So, maybe a third career.
This lady, she's just doing it all.
Yeah, what?
At some point after this, Sharon accepts a teaching position at the University of Michigan.
Go blue.
That's right.
Woo. Woo.
Okay, so. While at the University of Michigan, Sharon was selected for a prestigious fellowship called the W.K. Kellogg National Leadership Fellowship. This basically allowed Sharon to create a K-12 outreach program in urban design. Tied to this program, Sharon would author two books, Learning Through the Built Environment and Weaving a Tapestry of Resistance.
That is so great. Young education is so important. Is this program still alive? Also, those books sound like a must-read.
Yeah, the program sounds amazing. And I love that she was able to publish her findings from the program so that others can learn from it, right?
Yes. This is how I know of her, because those books came across that I would come across and I want to read them.
Yeah.
So I believe the program still exists in some shape or form. We'll get into a little bit more of what she does. But anyway, so besides these books, Sharon has been published in all these places. Like I mentioned her books, but she's also publishing articles. And because of this, she has also given lectures all over the country. Now, when we talk about academia, things like publishing, this can all bode really well for a professor. So this would lead to Miss Sharon to be the first African-American woman to be promoted as a full-time professor.
Yay! Congrats, Sharon. Sounds like she really deserved it for all the work she was doing and publishing, right?
Yeah. So she would also become the second African-American woman to be elevated to fellowship in the AIA. Now, if you can recall, our episode 2 lady, Norma Merritt Skolarik, would be the first.
I do recall. And that is so cool to talk about the second. The first always get all the glory, but I like knowing about seconds and thirds too.
Yep. So it's really fascinating to put it all in context. Now, this would lead Sharon to also become the first Black woman to serve as the president of the National Architectural Accrediting Board.
Wow. Way to go, Sharon. Just getting all the firsts and seconds and doing it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also that is so important. She was so invested in education.
Yeah.
NAP provides oversight to make sure architecture programs meet certain important criteria. So it's not the Wild West out there, you know? There's a lot of organizations that keep this profession very regulated, which I kind of like. It puts a lot of weight into calling ourselves architects.
Agreed. So yeah, any sort of leadership, it's always nice. I would tie NAB with NCARB, AIA, ACSA. Those are like the heavy hitters when it comes to how architecture gets regulated from school to licensing and beyond that. So anyway, winning all of these accolades and leadership roles, Sharon would be inducted into the Michigan Women's Hall of Fame.
Hey.
How could she not? It was only a matter of time.
I mean, it really was.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sharon will continue to teach at a lot of universities, such as the University of Washington. One of her concentrations is the urban environment and civic engagement. She would serve at the Seattle Design Commission, Capitol Hill Design Review Board, and a few others.
I love that she's spreading her knowledge all over the country.
You had me at civic engagement. I need this education in my life.
Yep. All right. So in 2009, Sharon would be the second African-American woman to be awarded the AIA Whitney M. Young Jr. Award for Civic Engagement. Again, Lady Episode 2, Norma, was the first. So be sure to check out our show notes because I have a great photo of Sharon and Norma from the 2009 AIA National Conference when Sharon accepted her award. Now, I will need to confirm this in our wrap-up episode, but if a person is an AIA member that wins the Whitney M. Young Jr. Award, they typically get automatically elevated to fellowship, but I'm not sure if Sharon would have gotten elevated at that moment or if she got elevated before, but it's still an amazing honor.
I can't wait to see this.
Me too.
Yeah, the photo is great. I almost like fangirled. I was like, oh my God.
Look at them.
Like an icon with the living legend together. It's like, ah. Okay. So after winning all of the awards and doing all the things, Sharon would move back to New York to teach at Parsons School of Design. And of course, because she's amazing and people were like, oh my gosh, she's back in New York. AIA New York would welcome her with their Chapter Medal of Honor. And the Beverly Willis Foundation will award her the Beverly Willis Architecture Foundation's Oculus Award.
Wow on wow on wow.
What a homecoming.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in 2017, Sharon would publish another book called When Ivory Towers Were Black. This is a book that has been on my reading list for so long. It is a book that is described to be at the intersection of race, urban development, and higher education.
Another must read.
Mm-hmm.
Adding it to my Libby list now.
Yes. Sharon is someone who continues to do the work. So, Najidi, when you asked about her K-12 outreach programs, I'm not sure if the one that she started back at the University of Michigan still exists, but I know that there are several others that still remain that I'm sure that she's involved in. And just hearing... She was inspiring to me before I found out about her, just of like all the things that she's done in academic spaces and her books and her articles and her speech, her lectures. But she still continues to inspire me today. And learning about her, like y'all, it just gives me chills to see how much we have in common. Like a fellow French horn player. You know how many French horn players there are? Not that much. Anyway, sorry.
If you say so. I mean, I can't believe I knew nothing about this lady until today. I have a new role model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm also bummed that we hadn't heard about Sharon until now, but I'm really glad we're talking about her. It sounds like she's really working hard to bring issues of race and urban development to the forefront and talk about how we can create better designs that address these issues.
Yes, she's incredible. Now, I do have to give credit to two interviews that I referenced throughout. One was conducted by Madame Architect, like I mentioned, and Parlor, which is a UK-based group. They both provided great insights in their conversations with Sharon. I thought they were very insightful.
I'm so thankful for these resources because I've used them too in the past. Thank you, Madame Architect and Parlor, for sharing all your great work.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I, you know, we like our quotes. Or, yeah, so I want to share two. One is Sharon's response when asked about her core mission. This is what she says. During my W.K. Kellogg National Leadership Fellowship, which built fellows' aptitude to work across disciplines as change agents, I determined that my agency would derive from intellectual leadership. That is, I would learn to lead through the power of ideas and voice rather than through a formal position. To that end, I have aspired to understand the ways that place, locality, intersects with collective human agency to spark transformation in oppressive and unjust conditions, whether large or small. Most importantly, I strive to communicate my understandings in a way that motivates others to take action.
I have to say it's working. I just want to leave this recording, take off my earphones, walk away, and go be an agent of change right now. I don't know how. I don't know where, but I gotta go.
We're not done with the episode yet, though. We'll stay a little bit longer.
I know. Okay, I'll stay. I'll stay for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see that that was what spurred her career in the direction it went, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to convey these ideas to people in order to push them into action.
Yes. All right. So for the second quote, it's advice. She was asked, what's advice that she would give to those starting their careers? So Sharon responds, my advice for young people, regardless of their birth gender, would be believe in something that is larger than yourself, that connects you to your genealogy, culture, and locality. Then build relationships around that larger something so that you will have the audacity to resist the flattening seduction of neoliberal capitalism.
That's deep. I think that pertains to anyone at any stage of their career. That's just good forever advice.
Agreed.
Right. I love those. They're good motivator quotes, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Now we have reached the second half of our episode, The Caryatid. This is where we select a woman living today who is doing her thing, furthering the profession, and whose work continues to hold the profession up, just like the caryatids or columns, shaped like women, found on Greek-style buildings. All right, so without further ado, this week's caryatid goes to... Nysha Harper Mishan!
Nysha!
All right, so Nysha reminds me so much of Sharon. First, she is a self-proclaimed archivist, a term that she created that is basically an architectural professional and enthusiast driving economic, environmental, and social reform to foster positive changes in society and within the profession. Now, that's a quote from her website, but yeah. An architect and an activist to get up.
Yes, I'm so glad that we're talking about her. I enjoy following her on Instagram. She shares a lot of great things. She's another one that makes you feel, as an architect, there's a lot we can do to just do better. We just got to figure it out and go do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is so cool. And I love that she's creating this new terminology or like career pathway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, archivist just sounds so badass legit. I'm so proud to call myself an architect, but now I want to be an archivist. I need to get on that.
All right. So besides being an archivist, Nysha is an educator, speaker, business strategist, and an architect. She's based out of the Netherlands, but as we speak, she did announce this week in December that she will be moving to Canada on Instagram. Yeah, she'll be moving to Toronto.
Right. I saw that.
Wow, a worldly lady.
Yep, just like yes. Sharon. Wow on wow on wow on wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's so cool. I hope to meet both of them someday since we're talking about, you know, living legends and icons. And
let's work on that. Let's make it happen.
Yep. All right, so before we say see you later, we want to give thanks to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical producer, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about Sharon and Nysha along with our banter and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing ladies. Again, thank you.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your French horn players, your orchestra musicians, your archivists, and your archivists too. Just tell them all. Give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a nice review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspod and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, bye.
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 Oh, the game's at 5. Sorry.
What did you say? Game 75?
The game is at 5. I forgot.
Is it a UM game?
Yeah, U of M.
Okay. We better hurry, people.
Okay,
we
better U of M's playing Iowa.
Oh, we gotta. Let's keep going. Yeah.
I was going down.
No, it's college football season right now, so.
Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach.
By becoming NCARB certified, like I did, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses.
Learn more at ncarb.org.